that, except that we can see here that it's the CEO and the CFO, but you did introduce yourself. I don't think honorable members will make you that will be an issue because of time or managing time. Will allow you to quickly go to your presentation.
Thank you very much. The chairperson of our council did send an apology to DST. We hope you receive it. This is an old map. It doesn't take into account that Sudan has been divided into two. So our cartography and GIS unit are a bit behind. We will tell them to get on with it. But we were just putting it to show some of the geographical features of the continent, which is where we work based on the mandate of being an Africa Institute. We are presenting today the annual report and audited financial statements. Chair, the vision and the mission are in here. And, this we changed about 2 years ago. And futuristic looking in terms of trying to be an indispensable voice in African affairs. And we just put our mission, position statement, and grand promise. The values of the organization, I know our colleagues earlier when we were talking about an acronym BRICS. Ours is PRIDE, participation, responsibility, integrity, development, and excellence that we strive for. We are an organ of state, and we indicate the act that constitutes us, and of course the important PFA. And in the year that we are reporting for, our research agenda then was on African continental integration. It has since changed in the new financial year. We can talk to that later. So we indicate our mandate, which is to provide research and policy development support in pursuit of programs that contribute to the development of the African continent. Research which fosters continental patriotism, increases awareness of Africa, especially for people in South Africa, but across the globe. And I think on the last question that you were raising for CHEER, that we do not remain elitist. The idea is also to work at the grassroots. So in anticipation of that, we will speak also to some of the few programs we have in that regard. We also establish networks globally in South Africa as well as on the continent. And our objectives, Chair, really tie to that, promoting knowledge on African affairs, particularly in the social sciences. But that does not discount that we do have some natural sciences working with us. The divisions within AISA, our core business is research, and we indicated at the top of the slide, we have a research division with five units: peace and security, sustainable development, governance and democracy, science and technology, because our mother body deals with that, knowledge transfer and skills development, and then other business units dealing with publications, library services, outreach and international liaison, and then support provided by corporate affairs, finance and administration, and human resources. Chair, here we indicate some of our management. Unfortunately, we have interviewed for the executive director research, but he's held up by family commitments in Sweden, and we are expecting him to confirm this week Friday with us when he can join us. Otherwise, the other positions are filled, Chair. In terms of our research output for the year 10-11, we have a pie chart which indicates what we produced, monographs, vocational papers, technical documents, journal articles, policy briefs, books, but also chapters in books. And then we did, our researchers presented at a number of conferences, workshops, and seminars, as well as a presence in the media. The governance and democracy unit's mandate is to seek to promote and encourage the institutionalization and entrenchment of democracy and governance with fundamentals based on seeking regional integration across the African continent And some of the partnerships that we have developed in this unit include with countries like Brazil, China, India, Russia, because of the BRICS. We're also working with through the Department of International Relations and Cooperation with, amongst others, the African Union. And we have a number of local partners as well that we work with. We have, you know, earlier on this year, for example, some of our team was in Sudan for the South Sudan referendum, so we also monitor elections. And the team is also working on a number of projects, and on the next slide, we do give an indication of some of the projects that were undertaken in the year, looking at the role of South Africa and African continental integration. Quite a bit of that work was done with stakeholders in Zimbabwe, trying to get their view of how they think South Africa is playing a role in continental integration. The AU has an industrialization plan, and one of our researchers did work going to the AU headquarters in Addis Ababa, but also went to SADC to see the extent to which there is synergy between what is done at the continental level and the sub-regional level. And so these are just some of the results from there. We produced some journal articles, policy briefs, and did presentations at various conferences. We also, as we indicated, worked on a paper on Zimbabwe in terms of South Africa's continental integration, but that also included interviewing African parliamentarians in Midrand at the Pan-African Parliament. And we have two interns who are in the unit, and one of these interns actually did go for the electoral observation in South Sudan in January. The peace and security unit, and I think that, you know, for those of you who might have seen the Mo Ibrahim Index, which has just come out, this is an area that bedevils the African continent. We've just seen the events in Libya, Ivory Coast, amongst others, but the other hot spots, Somalia, amongst others. And this unit looks at post-conflict situations, but also early warning, trying to try and understand what might be drivers of conflict, and then also seeking African solutions to some of these things. One of our researchers was in Burundi, also in Rwanda, looking at the Gacaca courts, for example, as a means for social justice. So it's really looking at peace and security issues, border resource issues also as drivers of possible conflict across borders, including looking at water resource issues, amongst others. The projects undertaken by this unit in the year reporting was looking at natural resource management in the Congo basin rainforest, because this rainforest cuts across a number of countries, from Gabon in the extreme west, Central African Republic, the DRC, amongst others. And there's concern about you know, Chinese harvesting of resources in a number of these countries, but also European Union, in multinational organizations, as well as the U.S. The issue of Burundi, we've spoken about, the nexus between social capital and national reconciliation. And Chair, at the bottom, we do give an indication of some of the results, general articles, policy briefs, and then a book chapter in the Nile River book. It's a book which we actually launched last week with a number of ambassadors and high commissioners from the 11 riparian states that form the Nile River Basin, from starting from countries like DRC, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, Tanzania, Kenya, South Sudan, Republic of Sudan, as well as Egypt. I think to the extent that Boutros Ghali spoke about the possibility of war, starting with water resources, among others, I think SADC can learn a few things from this. It will be useful. I mean, there are high commissioners and ambassadors that actually asked us to have a workshop where we can deal with these things broader, because amongst other things, most of the countries were upset that there was a treaty signed all the way in 1929 between Egypt and the UK because of grain of cotton, and it gave about 80% of the water of the Nile for Egypt to use. So there have been discussions to try and change that arrangement, and we are part of that process. We had a book which we have released on that. Our colleagues do provide guest lectures at the South African National Defense Force, as well as South African National War College, amongst others. So again, we try and interact with government departments in South Africa, but also with multilateral organizations in this regard. And we did provide briefings to the Pan-African Parliament as well, their committee, Portfolio Committee on International Relations, Peace and Security. With regards to sustainable development, again, linked to the fact that much as we talk about Africa developing at about 5 to 6%, are the African people really benefiting from these resources, and to what extent is the harvesting of natural resources leading to development? And I think in South Africa in particular, the whole discussion with China surrounds that, and the fact that we export raw materials with very little value add, and therefore jobs and skills not being developed. And this is where, to a certain extent, people like Kia, I'm sure, can assist. Chair, in this area, we did work which looked at, among others, informal trade at border posts, particularly, I mean, you know, this was a continuation of work that had been done previously looking at informal trading on the border of Ghana and Togo, and this was a continuation for Cameroon and Nigeria. And indeed, I think that, you know, coming this morning on the plane here, one met with the Chief Director for Communications at Home Affairs, and we're congratulating them on their clean audit. But one of the things that in Southern Africa is a challenge is how we manage informal trading across borders. I think South Africa in particular, if we are to be, you know, a good citizen in the region, has to take this into account. And we have shared some of this work with our colleagues at Home Affairs, including work that we also did last year, where we published a special edition looking at international migration. Chair, at the bottom, we indicate some of the results from this work. And there was work done particularly on Kenya and the indigenous people of Lamu District, but also the people of Eldoret, where there was a specific ruling by the African Court of Justice and Human Rights that ruled against the government of Kenya and suggested that, you know, the indigenous people be given back their land and certain compensations. So this is an important case on the African continent for other countries to take note of. And I think in South Africa over here, we are aware that Parliament has recently been dealing with a bill or an act about the Khoisan people and locating them in the family within the development initiatives in South Africa. Science and technology, as we've indicated for this committee before, is not necessarily us doing the hard sciences, but looking at how results from science and technology, natural science and technology, can be used for development, or what the impacts of science and technology could possibly be. And we indicate some of the highlights that this unit is involved in, and some of the work that has been done over the year. This year was looking at renewable energy, and work was done in Cameroon, in Kenya, looking at this. We've used GIS and remote sensing to look at land use changes, and there was a special focus on rural areas in Zimbabwe and South Africa. We're also involved with the Standard Bank, where Standard Bank had requested us to try and have a better understanding of the African continent. We've done work with them in the previous year on the special migration edition that we did in our journal, Africa Insight. This seminar series that have continued, our country series, where we give them information on various African countries, and with Standard Bank being spread across more than 20 countries on the continent, this has proved useful for them. Our book on energy, we are going to be launching at COP17. It's one of the projects, one of the books we are launching. And then there's another book on natural resource usage also with the Institute for Global Dialogue that we'll be launching at COP17 next month. Knowledge transfer and skills development. This unit, over the past year, dealt a lot with what we have now termed and moved to another unit called Special Projects. The internship project, and here we're grateful to the department and the NRF for providing funding for, I think, 6 interns during the reporting period. We also have a fellowship project, a program, where we get fellows to be with AISA. They don't have to be located physically at AISA, nor to be in South Africa. They can be anywhere in the world because of the use of ICT. And through them, we get them to lead, where we do a call for papers, and they then get authors and then end up leading the process of the development of chapters, and the end result is a peer-edited book. The AISA Young Graduates and Scholars is a capacity-building project where we work with universities in South Africa, but also across the continent, and we get postgraduate students to, again, we put out a call for papers, and last the conference we held in March 2010 dealt with peace and security, and they, you know, together with their lecturers, they send us abstracts, and eventually we hold a conference. We've been holding all the conferences here, in Gauteng, for the one in 2012. We intend to hold it with the University of Venda in Toyandu. The AISA Campus Lecture Series is work we do with universities. And again, we are encouraging where our researchers have been on field work in the African continent for them to go and present their findings at universities to engender and encourage a research culture amongst young researchers, and hopefully that they can be an interest in Africa as well. The Archie Mafeje Memorial Lecture is in honor of Professor Mafeje, who, when he passed away in 2007, was a fellow at the Africa Institute and had spent most of his life in Europe, Egypt, and other Holland, amongst other countries. And this is we had two annual lectures. The first one was last year. We had the previous financial year, we had Ugandan Professor Nabudere speaking, and this year in March at the Walter Sisulu University, we had Professor Jimmy Adesina speaking. The idea is next year to have a South African speaking, because these two have been African intellectuals, and hopefully we're also trying, since there have been males, for we're hoping we get an African female scholar from South Africa to speak. The Scramble for Africa Conference Chair, we held it in this financial year, but I started planning it last year, and it is linked, we hold it a day after Africa Day on May 25th, so it's just to mention it, but it's something we're going to be holding annually, and next year we want, the theme will be 10 years of the AU, and trying to reflect on what has happened in the past decade with us having had the AU. And Chair, we give the results at the bottom of what we've done under this unit. And then we just mentioned a number of special projects. We've spoken about the South Sudan referendum. We also had a project funded by the Norwegian government where it was dealing specifically with gender issues within the SANDF, but also within SADC. And one of our colleagues actually then helped the government of Sierra Leone to try and develop a training manual on gender issues within the armed forces, as well as inputting into their white paper. We've spoken about lectures at military academies, and we've indicated it there. We had a North Africa project and the book is just in the final stages of being produced. It was bridging the gap between North and Sub-Saharan Africa. Incidentally, we were in Egypt in November last year, and when we were asking them if everything was all right, they said everything was all right. And lo and behold, we see how North Africa has changed very quickly in a year. We've spoken about the Nile River Project, the Standard Bank Project. We also then had a joint project with the Social Science Research Council in the United States, and we published a book on HIV/AIDS with them. We are in the final stages of finalizing an AISA autobiography. It's going through a peer review process, and it's really looking at 50 years of the institution's history, but interspersing that also with developments on the African continent and internationally. We mentioned a number of our partnerships, the department itself, DECO, the NRF, the HSRC, the AU, SADC, and a number of others, so the Russian Academy on African Affairs, and Chair with that indicate, again, some of the work we've done with regards to the media and others. Chair, I'll just jump the slide talking about what the publications division does, but then go to the slide which shows some of the products that came out of this division. We published a number of books, journal articles. We have a journal which comes out four times a year, occasional papers, monographs, and policy briefs, and it publishes work of you know, both our researchers, but also people from outside. Some of the activities that they were involved in to try and market the organization and our products, they participate in book fairs, among them the Cape Town Book Fair, and then a number of other events with DECO Literary Week. We're involved in the launch of the Thabo Mbeki Leadership Institute, the South African Society of Educators. The MAP conference was around dealing with MAP issues, and this is where our cartography unit and our GIS were involved. And of course, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation has an annual conference, and we participated in that. Taylor and Francis are publishing house, and we worked with them also in looking at educational issues when they held an Indaba in Rosebank, and also participated in the African Studies Association meeting in the UK. Chair, here we just give an indication, again, almost repeating some of the things that we're involved in. The Nile book, we decided have it in one of the riparian states, and Nairobi was central. So the authors who are from around the African continent, but mainly in East Africa, it would have been cheaper for them to fly there and fly to South Africa, held a conference in November last year, and this is what we has now led to the publishing of the book. We have a partnership with institutions like the Institute for Global Dialogue, a foreign policy think tank, and as we indicated, we are having a book together with them, which we are launching at COP70 on natural resource governance. Our library and documentation center continues to grow. We indicate our total holding of books, including two collections which were donated to us by Pierre Botha as well as Michel Antoine. The journals that we subscribe to, including our own journal, the figures are there. Our reference collection, and then we have exchange agreements with other libraries across the world. So rather than buying books, we are able with them to exchange through which, and we use mainly our journals, but the books that we also publish to get their, you know, to increase the size of our holdings. And in other cases, people give us books. Sometimes we have visitors who come to the Africa Institute, and they give us books, and that's also there. And Chair, at the end of the financial year, our holdings amounted to almost 97,000. In the previous year, they had been just over 95,000. We just give an indication, Chair, of the spread of users of our library. I think we could be doing better. We've done a survey, and we are told that our location seems to be a challenge in terms of people walking in. But of course, in today's world where electronic usage is how people access information, we are working with the NRF through a grant that they were given by the Carnegie Foundation to try and move along the process of digitization. Chair, I'll jump this is our records management seminar that we did with the University of Limpopo. Talked about the geo portal that we launched last year, which gives maps of the African continent, and it covers 28 themes that shows you the details of various countries. We also indicate some of the partnerships that we have with regards to the GIS, including this Africa Geo Information Research Network, which is a number of partners, including the HSRC. We have a schools outreach program, and previously we used to go to individual schools. Right now we're working with the Department of Basic Education to try and bring the schools to one location. Then we can be able to meet with a lot more people. Obviously, in terms of the number of schools in South Africa, we are just creating a minimum impact. We've got to find ways, and maybe this is where, again, ICT might be the way to go in terms of getting the material captured, in very simple language for the students. The Department of Education has spoken to us about the need to upgrade their geography study materials for certain African countries. Unfortunately, they say they don't have money, so we've got to try and find a way in which you can work with them to try and see how we can improve knowledge in this area. Chair, we have a database of maps, both old and new. Again, We during the year reporting, we captured about 348 maps, and the idea is again to digitize this, and find a way of putting them on our website. Obviously, we cannot challenge Google Map or Google Earth, but I think we have some interesting maps, and hopefully they can be used by researchers and others. We just here indicate some of our outreach programs, and the Ambassadorial Forum, because we are based in Tshwane, is where the headquarters of diplomatic missions are. We just indicate some of the embassies and high commissions that we worked with. The Walter Sisulu Pediatric Center came to us and said, could we help them popularize their work? They deal with young children, heart problems, and they have to fundraise to get these children from across the African continent. So here we had the High Commission of Malawi with us, because a number of children had come from Malawi. And it just, then we dealt with Sudan. This was in June last year, and there was a debate at that time as to what the referendum would say in January this year. The present Sudanese ambassador said, no, they were going to stay together. South Sudanese said, we are going. And of course, we saw the results. 9th July, it has become an independent country. Did some work on Nigeria at 50. We dealt with Russian investments. The Rwandese High Commissioner at that time spoke to us as well, Chair. Professor Ben Magubane, an icon, South African icon in the social sciences, and 80 last year, we were part of the group that organized this conference together with HSRC and other partners. Chair, we indicate in terms of when we go to universities, some of the universities that we've gone around to. Our council has said we must work with more universities than this, but I think capacity is also a challenge, and they have indicated that why do we remain with only these ones? We've said these ones are weaker in terms of research output, but I think we're finding ways in working with other universities. I think on the 25th of October, for example, we'll be at this university where they are doing a career day, and we'll be speaking to them about research. So we'll find ways of cooperating. So I'll jump this because these are just seminars indicating what we've spoken about before. We indicate some of our partnerships, which are both local and international. We have MOUs with, amongst others, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. In the reporting year, we did two seminars with them on the development and creation of the Southern African diplomat. We are working with them and other partners to deal with a program of teaching global governance in the SADC region, cooperating with the German government. The North-South Center in Portugal, we work with the HSRC. The city of Tshwane, we do the ambassadorial forum. So in the next two slides, we just indicate some of the both internal and external factors that impact on the work that we do. We note that, of course, yes, we have competition, and we've got to find ways to up what we do in order that we can indeed make sure that the vision that we desire, we can be. We, of course, have internal challenges in certain respects, but these are some of these things, through fundraising and others, hopefully we can surmount. Attrition of staff in certain cases. And we then propose some of the things that we should be doing in terms of dealing with these challenges. We've engaged some of our partners on this, looking for partnerships, trying to raise funding. And we're slowly working on that. Some of the projects that we spoke about before, the HIV/AIDS book, the North Africa book, and others, these were, we've got part funding for the Standard Bank. We got funding from Standard Bank in terms of some of the work that we have to do. We had an institutional review last year. It suggests some of the things that we need to do, and we are working on looking at those issues. So in terms of human resources, again, we indicate that in terms of our budget, we spend about 55% on employee-related costs. Some of this, of course, we don't pay for, because we said the NRF has assisted us with some of this. We do have, we do pay levies to a CETA for training, and we have after our training, and this allows us to get back some of that money when we have done training. And so we do indicate our targets as well as the actual during the course of the year in terms of the distribution of our employees. It's a big debate for us in terms of research in particular. around whether it might not be better to have a smaller component of researchers and then maybe commission work across the African continent, because then you have a bigger spread. It's something that we are going to be discussing with our council this coming weekend. We have an age distribution which shows, you know, staff at, you know, both in terms of gender on that slide, and then also demographics of our employees. We also show qualifications of our staff, all the way from PhD up to staff enrolled in masters and other programs. Mainly, and here it's mainly in the research area that we're talking about. Chair, can I then, with your permission, ask that the CFO lead us on the finance issues?
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity, to honorable members. I'm just going to quickly run through what our finance strategic objectives were. If you take the AHISA history from where we came from in terms of our financial control environment, we've come a long way, and I'm proud to present a set of annual financial statements that's unqualified and clean. During the year, we contributed, or most of our times was spent in improving the control environment, also to achieve financial excellence through efficient and effective controls and processes, especially around our supply chain management and procurement processes. Also in terms of the deficiencies that was identified by the auditors in prior years, so we had firm commitment in attending to these. Also in terms of safeguarding of our assets, and also to regularly review and update our policies on an annual basis to improve our business efficiencies and effectiveness. We also focused a lot on budget and the utilization of it effectively in pursuance of our mandate. And the next slide, these are just detailed breakdown of what our overall objectives within the finance and IT and administrative divisions are. It's there for your perusal. I'm going to go to just I've highlighted the five major areas in terms of our strategic objectives, and I'd like to go to just quickly give you an overview of where we come from in terms of the audit opinions that was expressed over the last 5 years. We started off with a disclaimer, then a qualified, unqualified. Unqualified with matters of emphasis last year, and this year we ended up with an unqualified and clean audit report. In terms of the financial performance, AHISA ended the financial year with a deficit of 4.587. In the prior year, we landed up with a deficit of 3.733 million. If you can recall, about 3 years ago, we had an accumulated surplus of almost 15 million, and our shareholder was very concerned that we don't utilize or spend our funding appropriately. This year, we can report that we have managed to reduce that accumulated surplus to 5.5 million. The deficit derived as a result of the derecognition of our pension fund surplus. We converted our defined benefit pension fund to a defined contribution fund, and we had to derecognize this in our annual financial statements, which obviously had an impact. The total amount there was 3.202, and in this same financial year, we had to write down the value of our inventory. This relates to all previous publications, and to state it at a fair value in our annual financial statements, we had to reduce the value thereof. Included in the accumulated surplus, which currently stated in our annual financial statements on page 150, there was also committed projects that wasn't expensed at year-end. So all of these funding have to be carried forward into the new financial year to enable us to complete the projects. There's also an amount of ring-fenced money which was submitted to the National Treasury for approval so that we can utilize it in this financial year, and that amounted to 2.3 million. I also want to just refer you to our contingent liabilities, which was also stated in our annual financial statements. At the date of reporting of our annual financial statements and our financial position, there were some contingent liabilities that we couldn't necessarily provide a specific amount for, and therefore we listed it under contingent liabilities. The total income that we generated for the financial year amounted to 32.66 million. 93.6% of this revenue was coming from the Department of Science and Technology by means of a grant, and the total expenditure for the year amounted to 37.256 million. 55% of our expenditure incurred refers to employee-related costs, and our non-current assets decreased from 7.7 million to 4.064. The decrease is as a result in decrease of asset value in terms of equipment, furniture, and intangibles. Our current assets also decreased from 7.932 to 5.704. The decrease can be attributed to trade and other receivables and inventory value at year end. Our non-current liabilities decreased from 5.5 million to 4.6 million, and our trade and other payables increased from 1.9 to 2.38. AHISA was solvent at the end of the financial year with total assets less current liabilities at 5.502, and our current liquidity ratio is 2.3:1, which means that for every rand of current liabilities, we have 2 rand and 29 cents to cover the liabilities. AHISA managed through improved monitoring to reduce the accumulated surplus, as previously stated. We have utilized our budget more effectively and efficiently during the financial year, and although we anticipated a break-even budget or financial end result, we landed up with a 4.587 million deficit, which was covered through the accumulated surplus that arrived from the prior year. This is just in a nutshell. In terms of our performance budget against actuals, there's a 12% variance in expenditure, and the overall variance is 13%. And I'd like to conclude with that. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I think that it's important that before one allows members to ask some questions, it would be important that comparing to the last presentation that AHISA had last year with the challenges that they are still having, but it's safe to say that at least there is an improvement. There is that light at the end of the tunnel, and we do think that they are expected to do more. I will allow the members to ask questions. Honorable Sheikh.
Thank you. Obviously, one's a little concerned about how fewer people use your facilities. And obviously, you know, you have all these researchers sort of, you know, going around in circles, chasing their tails and presenting, you know, gathering information. But we actually sort of see that, you know, your major client are your own researchers and not other people coming in. So one hopes that the NRF digitization of your systems will actually help with that. How much is the NRF contributing to that? I mean, do we know how big that is, and when will you be online? You know, when will all your stuff be online, and what sort of target are you getting? Because obviously there's a huge competitiveness there. And I think that I did ask this question last year, is the possibility of getting funding from the rest of Africa, from the African Union, from the Pan-African Parliament, from SADC, from other African governments. I mean, this isn't only research being done in South Africa for South Africa's use. I mean, surely these other governments could be contributing something to it. I mean, what, 93% of your money comes from DST, and one would think that if other Africans contributed to it, it could be, you know, a really special asset. Then also wanting to look at your high turnover of staff. What is the ratio? You talk about it being, you know, that they're not paid enough. Are there other issues involved as well? And you know, I presume they're going to other research institutions. That's basically it. I don't have too much problem with this.
For me, it's just to question, or maybe it's a comment. When you talked about the schools, ensure that students, learners become more aware of the of Africa and what is Africa for and who is in Africa. There's a gap, because you can't talk about that without talking about an educator and also parents, because majority of education is three-legged. It's a learner, it's a parent, and it's an educator. I haven't heard you talk. You spoke about the Department of Basic Education. I haven't heard you also speaking about what are you then expecting the Department of Higher Education, or is it because learners there are expected to? I'm raising that because if we don't make emphasis on ensuring that our learners, parents and teachers really understand what is it when we talk, when we say I am an African, what then does that mean? And worse with the challenges that South Africa is having, because all what is happening in the other countries in the region and in the African continent affects us in a number of ways, in terms of labor force, in terms of crime, in terms of because majority of us are ignorant, and because of that ignorance, there's high rate of xenophobia. So it's a very important and a fundamental subject that each and every child, irrespective of color, irrespective of race, irrespective of gender, irrespective of class, what is it? When I am saying I am an African, what really does that mean in general? Do our people understand that it's not right to call somebody Igwere Gwere? I'm making an example. And because it's at times we blame people, but they are ignorant, and institutions of your kind, I agree, they are to ensure that they speak, they advise the communities in reaching out. I don't know, you'll pardon me, I don't know how what is it that you can do, whose responsibility, apart from government? You know, honorable members and guests, if there's one thing that make my heart to be sore, is that we are expecting government to do everything, whereas we always say it's a government of the people, by the people, with the people. Now, institutions of your nature, are they not also to ensure that they assist government? And yourselves also, as much as you talk about grassroots, you have got an element of being elite. Maybe it's an unfair comment, but I do think that because you are not coming forcefully in saying with the syllabus on history, not only on geography, on history, African history in particular, because our children are taught European a history that is not of them to really understand that why is it important that for Africa to take charge of itself and to control itself. And in that, there are a number of issues that are involved in that, in terms of resources and whatever. Why is there a whole issue about resource in Africa? All these conflicts are not about anything else. They are about resources at the end. And therefore, for me, and pardon me, it's a subject that is closer to my heart, is that how then to ensure that you really assist? And I maybe at some point, not today, will it not be important that it's a recommendation that you have to look, maybe as the committee, develop a user-friendly document about Africa, not an academic and highly sophisticated document that will only be known, be read by politicians or leaders, but ordinary people on the ground that are walking around in Cape Town being intolerant of some of, and I'm not implying that there's nothing wrong. There are things that are wrong that are being done by some of also the foreign nationals here that impact and compromises the notion that you are trying to put across that Africa must be proud of itself. So I sorry for that. I see Honorable Plaatje is having a question, and I'm sure that will be the last question, and we'll allow you to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. You've touched on the question that I wanted to ask also. Yeah, I was just thinking the issue of being an African, and now is the presenter said the Department of Education is involved. Now you ask yourself, how was the schools identified? How was the schools prioritized? The schools that have to be targeted with the outreach program. Is there a line where you draw to say, where do we start? Do we take it from primary up to where? And what programs do we have to ensure that it covers even up to the last person, especially when it comes to the areas that are really not in the advanced stage, like your rural areas, where you don't have newspapers and TVs mostly and these other sort of media mechanisms. So if you end up saying that, yeah, we understand our being African, you are really sure that there was a problem, but I've targeted the problematic area and I've started with them. That's how I started to prioritize and identify them. So we want a clear program so that we also as MPs can even monitor whether it's really happening on the ground. Does it bring change? Do the people understand? Thank you.
Chairperson, thanks very much. I'm going to try and start with the questions in the order that we asked. The last two questions really speak to each other. Our digitization actually precedes the one we're doing with the NRF now. Our journals, we work with Sabinet, which digitalizes documents in South Africa. So some of our journals, I've just forgot, I'm not, I think maybe from 1970 up to 2002 might, and I'll just double check those dates, are digitized by Sabinet. Then we have something called Africa Journals Online, much more recent journals from 2002 up to now, which are digitized through a network of African journals publishers. So it goes out to more than just in South Africa. So to a certain extent, that information is available there. Now, the digitization that we are doing with, we can remove it, I think we've finished. The digitization that we are doing with the NRF has not necessarily started, because what the NRF, what they got a grant, I think, of about 300,000 US, and a number of the science councils then had to indicate their needs. NRF were just leaders. We would have to determine what we wanted to digitize. Of course, there are copyright issues, and we may not necessarily be able to digitize other people's material, or if we digitize it, we might not be able to do much of it. It's quite expensive. We've spoken with the University of Pretoria. They want to help us. I think it's about quite a number of rands per page. We're expecting a delegation from the U.S. to come and help us. They're going to bring a scanner down, and we're hoping that maybe we can convince them not to, that it will be wasting with climate change and all that, they're going to take it back, maybe leave it with us. But we're going to be working with the University of Pretoria. So in a sense, going electronic is the way. I mean, even if you wanted 100 people to walk into a site, the library won't be able to maintain them. So I think it's ongoing work in that regard. We've spoken to a number of other libraries globally, and we are pursuing that with some of the embassies in Tshwane, the U.S. through the Schomburg Center, which is the biggest holder of records on African Americans, Africans globally. The contribution of African governments and other parties. You know, when we went to the African Parliament, they were actually asking us to contribute, and we were a bit surprised. Because we understood that their governments pay for them to come. And there was a furor a few years ago about per diems and stuff like that at the African Parliament. So, the only area where we have been able to get funding, if at all, was when we worked with the Nigerian government partner. But there we have partnership projects. So I think maybe that's also the way to, if you have a country that is interested in an area, we then work with them, and hopefully there can be joint funding around that. I think that we are developing a strategy around fundraising. And we're saying in South Africa, corporates that are working into the African continent, certainly. Standard Bank has already shown, you know, in terms of the interest of their staff trying to understand the continent more. Because when they're in a country, they're mainly working in the bank and maybe working with an aid. But there might be other populations, you know, when you look at things like M-Pesa, which came from Kenya, as a system which we have now had to adopt in South Africa in terms of cell phone banking. Those are the kind of things they're asking us to look at for them to try and learn as well. There's a project that they're looking at with regards to Nigeria, looking at women in particular within a particular health, you know, living standards measures to try and see if those could be their clients. But they also wanted to understand Africans who have money who might want to invest in South Africa. Staff attrition, greener pastures in the main, where people maybe use AISA as a springboard to gain skills. You know, as we said, we have a comprehensive workplace skills plan. So we train people, and sometimes we lose them in that regard. We don't think we have lost them totally, because then they remain within the South African market. We have lost some of our people to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. The researchers wrote a lot. They've taken Freedom Park, has taken some of our staff. There was a young intern who speaks Mandarin, had trained in China. The Houghton government took it. So the loss is not necessarily total in that regard. A few people have left, either because between themselves and the organization, maybe there's incompatibility. They don't understand what you need to do. One or two personality clashes, supervisor-supervisee, so that's mainly where our attrition is. But I think as we try and improve, you know, whether from the finance side, the control side, we also have, you know, and with due respect to my research colleagues, you know, when you talk finance better, this is not their friend at all. In terms of how money is spent and how they have to report. So sometimes they say we are being too bureaucratic, but unfortunately we are here today to report on the money you give us. So I think it's also creating that culture and letting there be an understanding around that. Chairperson, together with the honorable member who asked, schools. Let me say, I agree with you that yes, indeed we shouldn't be dealing with only the young ones, parents, educators, or anybody else. I think that South Africans understanding that our umbilical cord is tied to this continent is of utmost importance. That there is even faster growth in other African countries than in South Africa, averaging 5 to 6% in certain countries. I think if you look at the Moi Ibrahim Index, again, it raises certain things, challenges. We've got 25 out of 100 for personal safety and things like that. We see the former Prime Minister or President of Cape Verde has won the Moi Ibrahim Prize, which has not been given out since 2008 in terms of governance. So we have challenges. I think we can learn also. I think the other problem is we almost always think that South Africa will teach the continent. We can learn from the continent. The question is how. And I think, Chair, if you look, one of the ways we have tried to do that, if you look on pages 150, from 157 to, you know, about 160, we show the media in which, you know, we are involved in. And, you know, maybe if we also went under corporate affairs, because I think under international outreach, we also show the media we are involved in. We agree that if we must get to the greater majority of the South African population, then stations like Mutsweding, Letsedi, the Gwala Gwala and others, Kosi and others, would be stations we might use. Unfortunately, some of our researchers, you know, not being South African, therefore, you know, only speak English or French. So that is also something to take into account. But as you can see, we have attempted, even in terms of the topics from page 53 to page 56, we indicate the media we appear. We can do more. I think it is necessary. We have spoken to some of the radio stations, Channel Africa, amongst others, although, of course, it broadcasts outside, to have dedicated slots. We've spoken to people like Radio Metro on Metro FM, who have a program 8 o'clock in the evenings on Monday or Tuesday looking at African issues. So I think we can do more. I agree with you, and we've got to find a way around that. TV might be, you know, we might want to look and see ETV, because of the Africa program, we appeared more on ETV than SABC. We'd want to look at that as well as an opportunity. And then, of course, there's social media. And there, of course, again, some of us, you know, it's not, you know, we'll give away our ages when we start talking about Twitter, Facebook, and others, Tumblr, and Flickr, and so on. But we've gone into that as well. We're beginning to grow it a little bit. I think photographs, sometimes also, it's not just words. When you put photographs, and because our research is going to the country, you put photographs out there, people see a difference. And also, that, you know, even if you were to tell people about Somalia, we just see destruction. But some of us see innovation, some of us see resilience, you know, mothers who have walked, you know, kilometers to try and get their children to get a little bit of nourishment or some medication. That is the African spirit as you talk about it. I mean, indeed, we could not have been the cradle of humanity and survived and given the world the population that he has now if, you know, if there had not been resilience. And here again, indigenous knowledge, I'm going back to the Khoisan and others, is something that I think we should do. AISA in the past did work with the Department of Education to develop set materials for history and geography. We are doing two books now, one on higher education in relation to the second decade that the African ministers had put together of education, I think from 2010 to 2020. We have 16 chapters on different African countries. So we have written to the Department of Higher Education and Training to say, could they work with us, look at this in terms of a seminar and a workshop. We're also then working on a book on education in South Africa, looking at various issues from absenteeism of teachers to safety at schools because of the increasing number of guns and knives and other things, drug usage in schools and so on. So again, we've written to the Department of Basic Education, and we are hoping that the DG who is there, who was my predecessor for a short while at AISA, will look at, you know, this proposal positively. He has already indicated whom we should meet in the department because he's busy until mid-November. So indeed, we have begun that process. Other players we're looking at are the United Nations Education and Scientific Organization, Cultural and Scientific Organization, looking at educational matters. And I think this is where corporates also become important because of corporate social responsibility tied to education. The schools that we go to, again, in terms of the capacity that we have, as I said, I think there are over 17,000 schools in South Africa. We've only hit about 200. It's just a drop in the ocean. We've got to find a much more innovative way to say, and again, electronic usage becomes important. Maybe working with people like the Government Communication and Information Service to see community centers, which are supposed to have electronic media facilities, to see how we can get this information out. We'll have to see how we can try and translate this information, and maybe this is where discussions with the Pan-South African Language Board might be useful. Job creation in that sense, African languages, the whole issue. I mean, in terms of the diagnostic review of the National Planning Council about education failing children in South Africa. So I think we'd need to do that. There's an organization, Chair, if you look in our book, I mean, in the annual report, where we say Ebokusini Solutions. Ebokusini Solutions works with grassroots. So through them, we have had a number of projects on the 26th of December last year. For example, we're in Yeovil, with over 20 African nationalities from across the continent, Kwanzaa being from Swahili about almost like a festival of the first fruits and, you know, self-reliance, depending upon yourself, community workers. And we're there working with them on a program. So maybe we should do a bit more around that. When we had the Africa Expo reporting in a different financial year, May 2011, we had African diplomatic missions at the National Cultural Museum in Swane, where about 12 to 13 African embassies and high commissions displayed information about their countries. We did a schools competition then, and the Stanza Bopape School in Mamelodi won. It was a quiz about African countries, presidents, when did they get independence. So we could start a bit around that in terms of moving forward. I think, you know, in terms of the idea that you again raised, there was a specific suggestion that maybe we can work with parliamentarians in terms of your constituencies to indeed say that, do people realize that the Bantu people start from Nigeria coming all the way? So if we were to trace our DNA, that's when you go on Cameroon, Nigeria, and people moved thousands of years all the way down. Of course, the Khoisan, the indigenous people were here. So, I mean, then you see that the boundaries of 1885 from the Berlin Conference divided people. But it's so deeply ingrained, the issue of boundaries, ethnicity, and what have you, that the whole project of continental integration is actually something that we're talking about, that, look, you can't do it alone, South Africa. You said I must be more enthusiastic and vibrant. I don't know, you stop me, so I'll stop.
No, it's I'm not. It's because sorry for that. It's because it is a subject like science and technology. It is a subject that is it's only people who know it more are very few, and it's a subject that if we are not as members of parliament. That also looks, monitor, ensure that there's implementation of policies and come with some new ideas and ensuring that we involve our people to understand. And I take the point that, in fact, in our constituencies, because that's where we really see some of these ugly things that are happening. And when you become closer to the people, you pick up that some of them is just, they are used because they are ignorant. And some of our brothers, in particular brothers, unfortunately this time without being sexist, that are coming from these countries are not really treating our people, especially the young women. Then in them being educated, I think that is then going to be very important. We will see as the committee what to do, because we really do, we're in the center of whatever program that is being run by this government in terms of science and technology, and therefore we've got a responsibility. So I do think that you at some stage you will see as a committee, how do we have more time in interacting with you and understanding that. And I'm contesting here before we close. Stop talking only on Africa things in universities. The Thabo Mbeki blah 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 thing is only focusing in universities. It is not focused, not bringing together black children in high schools and secondary schools. Therefore, that's my bone of contention. And if I am wrong in that, I must be told. But we will never be able to achieve some of these things if we don't ensure that we start from the foundation, which is at the lower. Thank you very much with the presentation. You always make some of us being excited, and when we think that we can have some interactions with you, we are consumed by some of the work that this committee is faced with. Thank you very much, and I do think that there is still you can improve. You can improve with all the challenges that all entities are being faced with. With that, I think you can be excused. Thank you very much. We will then just have some few minutes as the committee. Thank you very much. you are living in Rwanda, are you? I'm just waiting for Honorable Shin to go to the loop. I was checking with Shanaz if are there any discussions, and I was raising that anything for discussions or whatever. I was checking that because I don't know. We are only three, 1-1-1.
We're done.
I don't know whether there are any, what I will then, because I want to make a suggestion that, but if there are also some invitations and or some correspondence, what are we going to do with it? Because we are the only three, and usually correspondences or invitations want us to take a decision. I wanted to make a proposal that says, why don't we defer those to the next fully fledged portfolio committee? But she will indicate if there are things that we need to be for noting. So that's what I wanted to put across to honorable members. Thank you.
A repeat, because I mean they did have 2 days of climate change talks about 6 weeks ago in the National Assembly, which members of Parliament were invited, was very poorly attended. So I don't know if this is a repeat of that one, because if it is, I'm obviously not coming, because I've done it once. And it seems, obviously I'm trying to sort of refresh from the program, that I think it is virtually the same. That's just my personal view on that.
Would it not be important, therefore, honourable members, to then request us to just make that follow-up? to check if it was not the same. But also, I think as the committee we've got a responsibility. I was there, I think, the first day. It was very poorly attended by all parties right across, and as members of the committee, I think we must express among our members in our various parties the importance of us going to that to these workshops or whatever. So if then it is, even if it's not the same, I don't think that we'll have to ensure that people really do attend, because it was poorly attended. That's the comment. Poor was an understatement. It was really an embarrassment. I think that's the only thing that we have. And thank you very much, honourable members. What we'll do on my side, I'll make a follow-up on Honourable Ndlazi to check how is she. But the person who told me yesterday she was not okay. I've tried to phone. I said maybe still early in the hospital, but it was about past 9. But I'm going to check again, and then I will inform Shanaz. But she is in the N1 City Hospital. Yes. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you.
And I hope I've. Something that I don't know whether it is only you that attended in terms of science and technology, the one that was, there's a meeting that was in Cape Town. How many of our members attended? It's only Honorable Shin. The astronaut.
Yeah.
But she was not attending on our behalf. Was she attending on behalf of the committee? How many was it expected? How many we expected?
It was supposed to be three.
Only
she was on the meeting.
Yes. Oh, okay. No, all right. Thank you very much.
Yes. With the challenges, yes. Like any other conference.
Okay.